Hi everyone, this is Sam Black with Drafting Archetypes, and this week I'm going to be discussing four-color blue in MKM Draft. As always, the notes are available to follow along at patreon.com/draftingarchetypes. This is an archetype or space that is very similar to other archetypes or spaces or drafting styles that I've already talked about. What I've come to realize about this format is that my approach to an experience with this set is extremely similar to Wilds of Eldraine. The disguise creatures and clues actually kind of function similarly to adventure cards, both in that they give you opportunities to play your cards in slightly more awkward ways or spend extra mana to get a little bit more value. And they also both have ways of kind of nudging you to add extra colors of to your deck or rewarding you for having access to more colors of mana. And I like both formats, and I like that play pattern and that drafting dynamic, but it results in a situation where the way that I draft and the decks that I end up with are what some would consider soupy, where it's less a distinct archetype or distinct color combination and more just kind of a mix of cards. I usually have a plan and I'm very aware of internal synergies, but it's certainly not, you know, like I'm playing red-green tricks or something, some kind of like discrete thing like that. And there's a lot more room to kind of like, while I'm aware of the synergies that my deck has, it might have multiple overlapping but distinct synergies and stuff like that. So in both formats, I end up in a space where it's kind of hard to find new archetypes to talk about that I have a lot of experience with, because I find it very hard not to end up drafting the same way every draft, which leads to different decks, but doesn't really lead to different strategies. And I've also come to similar conclusions in terms of the evolution of the structure of the decks that I like to draft in this format to Wilds of Eldraine. And also, this is another thing that I kind of come back to fairly often in formats that have good fixing from lands and artifacts, which is I often like to draft four-color non-green decks or other multicolor decks that don't rely on green as a basis for fixing and instead rely on colorless cards or having a base in one or two colors and splashing the other, or just having a lot of non-basic lands and or a lot of card draw so that the mana is maybe a little bit worse than it would be by raw count in a green deck, but you see more cards earlier in the game, so you end up being able to cast your spells about as often, and your fixing is kind of harder, by which I mean with the green stuff, it's a lot of, you know, search for a basic land and it gives you one additional color. But when you're deck building, the way that I discuss it, you know, I often talk about like, well, Nervous Gardener fixes for all of the other colors, but really it fixes for only one of the other colors. And then you can, when you're figuring out like how many cards you have that give you access to each of your colors, you count it as everything. But then if you have a lot of that, you need to kind of round down because you're actually making choices rather than preparing for all of your splashes. Whereas if you're very highly prioritizing like Surveil lands and Thoroughfares, this doesn't work the same way for Escape Tunnels, then you get to like, you know, all of your sources will always give you the colors that they give you, all of the colors that they give you. So the issue that I run into with base green is that you need a lot of green sources so that you can reliably spend green mana to find your other colors. And then, because you have all those green sources, you kind of want your early game to involve green cards. And if the early green cards don't necessarily fit that well in the game plan of the control deck, then you end up either having pretty awkward mana or awkward early development, or playing cards that aren't optimal for your control deck as your early game. So you end up in a space where you're stretching your mana to fix your mana, and you could just not do that. So the space that I find myself trying to draft toward ends up being a very similar space to the bargain blue strategy that I discussed in Wilds of Eldraine, where you're basically looking for blue for card draw spells and splashing removal everywhere else. The difference is blue doesn't have like a common 5-mana draw 3 make a token in this format the way that it did in Wilds of Eldraine. And it also doesn't have a Hatching Plans equivalent, which means that I'm really less committed to blue as a base, and blue's not really doing anything all that exceptional for me here. I've started to really appreciate Deduce, one in a blue instant draw card, make a clue. And that's kind of the biggest draw for to blue for me in these decks. That and I guess the disguise creatures, the multicolor disguise creatures that include blue. Specifically, I guess, like Fairy Snoop, Gadget Technician, and Granite Witness. But you want like more 2-for-1s rather than 1-for-1s and some, you know, draw 3s. So I really like just end up prioritizing all of the different kinds of 2-for-1s. And yeah, this is definitely not necessarily base blue. It doesn't even have to include blue. The real point is draft with inevitability as a goal, prioritizing fixing but not prioritizing green fixing, attempting to avoid early game green cards, and prioritizing early removal, bombs fixing, and 2-for-1s, counting like any card that makes an object as a 2-for-1, also like Unusual Suspect, and all of the, you know, everything that makes a token, whether that token is a 1-1 or a clue or whatever. I've come up in my estimation of basically all of those cards that like create an extra object. They are usually either small creatures that generate some value, or like small creatures, or like larger creatures or small creatures that give you a medium or small creature. And the result of prioritizing all of that stuff is basically that you end up with more 1-1s or more clues and card flow. And the 1-1s feel very good in this format. People play a lot of 2-1s. The extra 1-1s let you block suspected creatures, or they chump block really big morph creatures. And they also like make it a lot harder for your opponent to kill you with On the Job. On the Job is usually like very telegraphed, and knowing when and how much you need to chump block to not die to it makes like it's telegraphed, but there's nothing you can do about it. Your opponent just has several more creatures than you do, and enough of them, and they like they get bigger, and you lose all of your life and or blockers and die that turn or the following turn. But if you have like some 1-1s you can throw away to block like their biggest stuff, then you can usually make the hit like not that bad for you. Somewhat relatedly, I'm also extremely high on Wisp Drinker Vampire, the black white 2/2/4 flyer that drains your opponent for 1 when a creature enters the battlefield, and you can spend 7 mana to give all your small creatures lifelink and death touch, and Detective Satchel. Those two cards are very good together and independently, and they both work really well with everything else that I'm trying to do, and I think that those two cards specifically are like both emblematic of like the strategy and kinds of synergy that I'm looking for, and also the like way in which I'm trying to make all of these colors overlap to like combine synergies that like you have to kind of reach to have access to all of. Like Detective Satchel is a lot better when you can pair it with cards like Novice and Spectre and Toxin Analysis, the one mana 1/2 that makes a clue, and the one mana black trick that gives a creature lifelink and death touch and makes a clue. Just more different ways to make clues to keep fueling the satchel. And then like Toxin Analysis plays really well when you're prioritizing having random 1/1s. So basically everything in this, like, well, I just want extra game objects space, they kind of all end up working out well together if you can just like grab all of the distinct extra game objects stuff. I played a sealed qualifier this weekend where I opened a pool that I thought was very much in like the bottom 20% of pools. Like the only rares that I played in my deck were the Black-White Surveil Land and Officious Interrogation, the blue-white Strive instant that makes a clue for each creature target player controls. Those are not high-impact rares, but I was playing in exactly this kind of space. I had a Whispdrinker Vampire, and I had a lot of commons that made tokens. I had three Gadget Technicians and a Dog Walker, and the only way that I could find any real synergy or power in my deck was just to maximize like my common 2-for-1s and extra bodies. And the deck ended up playing out really well, even though it didn't have any powerful rares, because you know, the Gadget Technician and Dog Walker type cards are very good in the format, especially when you can take advantage of those like tokens in some good way. That deck notably also had three Outcolds that played a pretty significant role in being able to, like, my plan was basically just to like race with these Thopters and then like tap my opponent's blockers and attack with some 3-power creatures on the ground a few times and stuff. And so this deck can end up operating in a little bit more of a like tempo type space if you're you know, you prioritize all these like creatures that make extra bodies, and sometimes that leaves you in spaces where you can attack. Again, it's not really a priority. I am very much drafting for late game inevitability, but it's also good to be able to capitalize anytime your opponent floods or stumbles or you kill all their blockers or whatever. So this space is structurally extremely similar also to Esper Vampires, not Vampires, Esper Flyers. Which is another deck that I've talked about on the podcast, except that I think red offers a lot in a very similar way to its role in the bargain blue decks in Wilds of Eldraine. Specifically, Shock and Galvanize are like having a very efficient removal pairs really well with this kind of value-centric game plan and prioritizing cards like Deduce. And then Gadget Technician and Dog Walker are good gold uncommons that red makes easier to use or better. Like Gadget Technician in particular, I think is a much better card if you just cast it face up for 4 mana than if you play it face down and then flip it over for 5 mana total. Not that, you know, it's not like I wouldn't cast it on 3 so that I can cast it on 4, of course. And it is good that it has disguise. But it's, you usually want to play a different disguised creature on 3 and then cast Technician on 4 and then flip your disguised creature on 5. That's usually a better play pattern with that. Or just casting like Inside Source into Gadget Technician, you know, which is 3 different colors, but that's what we're trying to do here. So this strategy kind of borrows a lot from and combines the Esper Flyer strategy with the 5-color bombs and removal strategy, but in a way that is valuing removal and generic 2-for-1s a little bit more highly than the Esper deck, and valuing green fixing much lower and extra objects more highly than the 5-color deck. So I made a list of the commons of each color that you want. I already talked about the red ones. In white, you're basically looking for Novice Inspector, maybe, depending on how much white mana you have. It's not a great splash, but if white can be one of can be like a base color, then it's very, 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 very good, especially Novice Inspector in conjunction with Public Thoroughfare as a good way to like get a clue early that you can tap for the Thoroughfare to not need to tap a land. Makeshift Binding, the 3-mana exile creature, gain 2 life enchantment. Inside Source, the 1/1 that makes a 2/2 for 3, and Make Your Move, the 3-mana instant that kills an artifact creature, big creature, or enchantment. That one is lower tier removal, but acceptable. I also think that this deck can play House of Vigilante, but it's, you know, not, it's an acceptable card, but not really something you're looking for. In blue, Deduce, Cold Case Cracker, the 4-mana 3/3 flyer that makes a clue when it dies. And Out Cold, the 4-mana uncounterable instant that taps 2 creatures and makes a clue. The other blue card that I find myself playing, despite the fact that it has a pretty bad win rate overall, is Benthic Criminologists, the 5-mana 4/5 that sacrifices an artifact to draw a card when it enters the battlefield or attacks. I've gotten pretty good use out of that card in this like very clue-heavy deck. It just ends up saving you enough mana that you're like, and you're pretty happy to have like a relatively big creature. In black, Extract a Confession, the sorcery speed edict that you can collect evidence 6 to make them sack their biggest creature for 1 and a black. Unscrupulous Agent, the 2-mana 1/1 that makes your opponent exile a card. Toxin Analysis, the trick that makes a clue and gives Death Touch. And Slice from the Shadows is okay. I don't really prioritize it very highly, but it's strategically appropriate for the deck, just a little clunky. And then Murder is acceptable if your mana's like better than it usually is. Like I don't want to go out of my way to play Murder, but if my mana's really good and or I'm very base black anyway, then it's nice in this kind of deck. Green. I am willing to play green cards. The green common that I like most is actually Vengeful Creeper, the 5-mana 5/5 that you can more disguise and then turn it over for 6 mana, and it destroys an artifact or enchantment. I like splashing for Vengeful Creeper, and then Bite Down on Crime, the fight spell that can collect evidence. Well, Blight spell, I guess. Vitugazi Inspector, the 2-mana 1/3, collect evidence to put a +1/+1 counter and gain 2, and locks it on Eavesdropper, the 3/3 that makes a clue. I'm not really looking to play any of those, but like they're all, you know, reasonably on plan for the strategy. I'm usually only considering these if I've, you know, gotten pulled into green by rares or you know, like Buried in the Garden is strong enough that it can like pull you into green if you're not, you know, not trying to do it for mana, or Killer Among Us is one that I don't want to value it as highly as its depth suggests. I do think that it's better in more aggressive decks, but like I said, I value 1/1s, and it's a card that's, you know, reasonable to include here if you don't have to go too far out of your way for your mana. Multicolor, I've talked about which face down creatures I like in general before, but in this specific strategy, I think the order that I'm prioritizing them is Gadget Technician most highly. It's good colors. I like that it's reasonable to cast for 4 mana. I like that it's 2 bodies. I like that it gives you flying. I like that, you know, for 2 mana, it can threaten to like kill 3 toughness creatures as a disguised creature. Followed by Sanguine Savior, the 2/1 flyer with lifelink, just because I've found that life gain is really valuable. It's really, really hard for the aggressive decks to outrace a face up Sanguine Savior on 3 if they don't have an immediate removal spell for it. Followed by Fairy Snoop. Fairy Snoop is a card that I continue to like, even though it doesn't have good stats. It blocks really well. It helps find your mana and bombs and stuff. It just generally does what I'm looking to do in this deck. It plays really well with Toxin Analysis. Followed by Dogwalker. Dogwalker has much better stats than the other ones, but it's not flying and just feels, I don't know, I might still be underrating it, but I like the flying offered by the other ones more, I guess. Followed by Granite Witness, which I also like a good amount. I think all of those cards are, all five of those are extremely close in power level, and I draft them pretty interchangeably. And then there's a big drop-off followed by Undercover Crocodile, which I think is acceptable but not great. And then another reasonable drop-off for the rest of the gold disguise creatures. And that's most of the commons that I'm looking to play. Well, those plus Gravestone Strider, I suppose. And yeah, it's hard to very narrowly define what this deck or archetype is, given that I think that it's like pretty firmly color agnostic. You're kind of looking for cards that cost only a single pip of any given color, unless they're very, very, very strong. You're looking for a pretty even number of color, like a pretty even distribution of colored sources. You know, you'll want like at least 6 or 7 ways to get each color, like lands that tap for each color of mana, and you're probably not going to be able to afford to have more than 8 lands that tap for any given color of mana. And then you're trying to kind of, you know, have like a strider or two to turn all of that from like dicey to like pretty firmly functional. And the shakier your mana is, the more you might want to like lean toward disguise creatures so that you can like reliably do something on turn 3 while you have like the right number of lands but not necessarily all of the colors. And in this space, you know, you really, really, really don't want to pass lands that you really don't want to pass non-basic lands except for the colorless one, I guess, the Branch of Itugazi. I am at the point where I'm pretty comfortable like pack one, pick one, just taking any Surveil land. If there's not a card that I really like I wouldn't take like a common removal spell over just some generic rare Surveil land. And that's basically what I have to say about it. You know, just prioritize, like the purpose of the deck is really just to prioritize value at all points. And make sure that you have a lot of flyers so that you like don't lose in the air, and make sure that you have removal so you don't lose to bombs, and just plan to play a very long game. And yeah, that's what I have to say about it. So I'm going to turn it over to questions from chat, as always, during the break from the lecture segment to the question segment, which are both just me talking, but whatever. I want to thank the newest patrons. So thank you very much to Raphael and Dan. Really appreciate it. If anyone else is interested in joining the Drafting Archetypes Patreon, getting some benefits, like access to the show notes and coaching discounts and stuff like that, be sure to check out patreon.com/draftingarchetypes. So, questions. Do I play the Clue land in this deck? I like it less than the other lands because it does come with some risks, but I don't think that the Orangutan is very heavily played, so I am willing to play it. I think most of the time it's going to help you cast your spells more than a basic if you are playing 4 or more colors. So to me, the risk is worth it. It also ends up doing some nice stuff sometimes. Like it has some weird synergies, like the blue uncommon case that solves on 3 artifacts. Sometimes helps solve it and can work with Gear Drakes and Satchels and stuff like that. I suppose I play it, but with reservations, and value it lower than the, like, if I think that I can make my mana work with other lands, I'd be more willing to take like a removal spell over that one and see if I can table it or try to find other fixing. But if it's late in the draft and I'm behind on fixing, then I certainly think that you want to like consider it an option. Will this be the last MKM podcast? That's a good question. That's usually something I would field a little bit later on in the episode. I'm not sure if I'm going to be trying to discuss. So I will definitely be talking about Thunder Junction in 2 weeks on the 10th, which is right before the pre-release. Next week, I don't know for sure. I need to think about it. It depends on exactly where we're at in terms of spoilers. I don't know if there's going to be another episode about MKM or not. Have I changed my feelings about Unscrupulous Agent, or do I only like it in this archetype? Well, I talked about how it is good and valuable in like red-black, since that deck is an attrition deck. But in general, like I said, I've all of the like low-impact individual creatures that give you immediate value have gone up in my estimation because of the reasons that I talked about, where just having extra 1/1s does seem particularly valuable in this set, due to being able to block 2/1s and double block suspected creatures and chump block. Chumping has felt pretty good in this format. Also, like, making your opponents extract a confession worse is pretty nice. I like Unscrupulous Agent more in general and like it particularly in this archetype. How do I value Sanitation Automaton as pseudo fixing / a pseudo 2-for-1? Well, I certainly wouldn't consider it a pseudo 2-for-1. I agree that it can smooth your draws, but it's certainly not giving you anything that I think even vaguely approximates card advantage in this kind of deck where like the surveil away a land and feel like you've drawn a card thing does come up in like aggressive decks sometimes, given that this deck is so good at spending mana for a very long time in the game. You're never milling a card where like you don't really care that it's gone instead of in your hand. As far as like the is it a value to drop? Like, is that card selection worth, you know, more than like a toughness would be or whatever? Not really. I like it if your mana's like really dicey, and especially if you have the clue land where it's nice to have a colorless creature that you can like tap to get mana of any color. But I think 2/1s are not in a great space in this format. There are a lot of 1/1s and 1/3s that it lines up really badly against. So I guess the answer is I will play it if I'm very worried about 2-drops in general, or, you know, like it is a way to reliably do something. It is good against opposing disguise creatures when you're trying to slow the game down. I also think if you're playing best of three, that it's reasonable to side in Sanitation Automaton in the draw, on the draw, like just in general. Because of how it lines up against disguised creatures. It's not a card that I am going to like. I would rather play any number of Gravestone Striders by a lot, and like Gravestone Strider's not great. Does lots of tap lands mean you should lower your curve to keep up or play more expensive spells to catch up? No. No, it doesn't. It costs, like, a tap land costs you 1 total mana during the game. You shouldn't like radically adjust your curve based on that in either direction. It's good to have things that cost 1 or 2 mana so that you can spend your mana efficiently, so that like a tap land isn't stopping you from, it's not like functionally costing you extra mana by not letting you use any of your mana on that turn. But I don't think that like you should really think about tap lands changing your curve overall. I will say I like to prioritize having a lot of cheap effects and a lot of clues and other like card flow and disguise creatures and drafting in such a way that I can spend all of my mana at all points throughout the entire game. That's like, you know, spending more mana than your opponent over the course of a game is a very good way to win. Spending less mana in the early game is a really, really good way to lose, to just get run over and lose early. And running out of things to spend your mana on in the late game is a really good way to lose a late game and have your opponent go over the top of you. This format, thanks to disguise and clues and a few other things, makes it pretty easy to be able to spend all of your mana throughout, like, all of most games. And you should be trying to do that. There's a question about 2/1s being bad. Is that for this deck specifically or generally across the format? They're actually better in control decks than aggressive decks. So, like, the issue basically is that the 2/1s line up really well against disguised creatures, but line up really badly against, like, unscrupulous agents and inside sources and dog walkers and gadget technicians and also against Gravestone Striders and V2Ghazi Inspectors and Sumala Sentries. And so if you're trying to attack with 2/1s, you need to have like a lot of combat tricks to make that work. And if you're trying to block with 2/1s, you can do it, but they don't get you anywhere. Like, they don't trade up very much. They're basically just a lot worse than a removal spell. And I don't feel like there's a real shortage of removal spells. And playing very many of them is, like, trying to play them defensively is a good way to just have, like, your deck be too low impact and make yourself too vulnerable to flooding out. Right, so deduce. Do you ever decide in a deck in this sort of space that you shouldn't run deduce if you can't generate enough card advantage from... if you can generate enough card advantage in other places? So I used to not prioritize deduce very highly, and it's gone up in my estimation, like all of the other kind of like low impact wheel spinny generate a little bit of value type cards. And I expect to continue to prioritize it, though, you know, if as your deck gets clunkier, deduce gets worse. My goal is to just draft in such a way that I kind of minimize how clunky my deck is and can continue to want deduce. I find it pretty easy to like to leave up some mana and to like find windows where I can cast deduce or sacrifice the clues pretty efficiently. I still wouldn't say that I've settled on exactly how highly I value it or how much my value of additional copies drops off, but erring toward valuing it more highly than I used to, or than I, you know, like, previously I was firmly taking Cold Case Cracker over deduce. I have shifted my position on that, although it's possible that a lot of this has to do with previously drafting more green, which meant that I more highly valued a single non-green pip flyer and also valued 4-mana creatures for collecting creature evidence purposes for Chalk Outline and Insidious Roots. I think that I would still value Cold Case Cracker more highly than deduce in green decks, but deduce more highly than Cold Case Cracker in non-green removal heavy control decks that don't care about their creature count in the same way. And both of the those decks respectively want like as much of as they can get of the one that they prefer. Question about this being harder to pivot in than Wilds of Eldraine and feeling more pressure to commit early in MKM. I don't think that I experienced that. I think that in Wilds of Eldraine, the kinds of synergies that exist are similar or a little more linear in terms of like food matters or like having value and then stuff that picks it up or like bargain and stuff that you're like looking to be able to sacrifice to bargain. And here I feel like a lot of the value objects are pretty flexible in terms of both like your base colors and how aggressive your deck is. But this could easily be just a function of like which kinds of things each of us are thinking about pivoting into and out of. How important are sweepers in four color blue? They're very, very good. No Witnesses is worse, considerably worse than the others, but still not bad. I value like Deadly Cover Up and the blue red one, Ill-Timed Explosion, are both fantastic. Like I said, I don't know if I'm going to be trying to take a very, very early look at Thunder Junction next week or something else about Murders. Like I said, it's really going to depend on where we're at in terms of previews, and I'll try to get a read on what people are feeling. This might involve a Patreon poll. But it would probably be kind of a bit of a last minute Patreon poll, as the decision will be informed by like how many of the commons we know about and stuff like that. So, very, very much, up in the air about the podcast topic for next week, but I wouldn't mind trying to talk more about, Murders if it makes sense. So thanks again for tuning in. I'll be back next week, and bye for now.
Prepare for light speed.